And now, on with the show.
Good evening, everyone. The time is 8:24 p.m., Monday, October 8th, year of our Lord, 2018, or whenever you're listening to this. But regardless, it's a time to drop to your knees and shout to the sky, why God, oh why, because it is time for a brand new episode of Film Fracas. This is Brett the Rock Johnson coming at you. With me, as always, are Robbie, the main man, DeShazer.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Shannon, the live wire widener.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
Carter, the whole effing show, Spilliards.
Who?
And special treat for you guys, we got our special guest here. You might remember him from season two. We got Graham Hellboy Gora. I remembered his last name this
time. They let me back on.
Very proud of myself.
Yes, welcome back.
We're very excited to have Graham here on the podcast tonight.
We're coming at you from the shed quarters in Austin. They were nice enough to let us come back, and we more than happy to come back.
We were invited back.
Yeah.
That's what I'm for now.
And so...
Please.
If you listened in last week, you heard Back to the Future get voted off in the best story episode, which means we are down to our last two movies. It is the season four finale, and it's all come down to The Dark Knight and The Lion King. And
we get started, can I mention something? Graham has been our best treated guest of all time. This is our third episode with Graham, and he has never recorded in the 5208 Media studios known as Mining Carter's Kitchen.
Dining room.
Slash dining room. It's an open concept. It's
just one big room with a stove.
It is. But Graham has yet to be subjected to recording in there, and I don't think that's fair. The only other guest to get this much of a good treatment is Shannon, who just got brought on as a host for the rest of her life.
You can't leave.
Long after we're gone, she'll still be here.
I will still be here talking about Pirates of the Caribbean.
She has all the passwords and...
All of the social security numbers, everything.
We trusted her with everything. We let her come in, guest host one episode, and we were like, here?
And now credit here card I numbers, am.
Everything. So, yes. Thank you for coming back, Graham. Thank you for sticking around with us, Shannon. This has been a great season. I just knocked into something. It's okay.
It's fine.
Let's get into it.
All right, Robbie, start us off.
The Lion King. Well, it starts off with a rollicking Circle of Life song.
Circle of Life song.
The circle song, as it's known affectionately in my family. I don't know. No, I like this movie. It's really good. It's a lot of fun. It's definitely a quintessential part of my childhood and my growing up. Which is why we have a bit of a hard thing here, which is that both of these films are quintessential to very different parts of my life here. So you got The Dark Knight and you've got The Lion King. We've kind of talked this movie to death, like we have with all of our movies every time. I'm excited to hear what Graham has to think about The Lion King.
Well, I love it. It's probably one of the best Disney movies. Not quite up on the level of Lilo and Stitch, but it's pretty up there. One of the special things I think about this movie is that for a lot of people, for a lot of families, children, adults, it's one of the animated movies that made people realize that animation can be so much more than just an hour and a half of kids' entertainment.
For sure.
Yeah. You have some real high emotional stakes that a lot of other movies don't always hit. The death of Mufasa, for example, is just a heartbreaker, to put it lightly.
Every time.
Just, you know.
Every time.
Some
of the stuff Carter and I were talking about last week is that the first half of this movie is an emotional heavy hitter.
Oh, yes.
And then we think it kind of drops off.
It does a bit. I would agree with that. One could look at it as just kind of like Simba has hidden himself away with Timon and Pumbaa. So it's like he's kind of not... He's sheltered himself from all this other stuff, but...
Quite literally, he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does fall off a bit. You
agree that it falls off a bit?
I would agree with that. It is also part because it is only an hour and a half long. It has a shorter running time, mm-hmm. So the climax does happen kind of quick.
That's true. Anyone have any other thoughts?
Well,
we're trying not to make this super short.
Basically, where I'm at with this is when I think of The Lion King, and we're talking mainly about strengths right now. When I think of The Lion King,
I go back to just kind of the level of detail with this, because when we talk about all of the other Disney movies that lead up to it, like Aladdin and Beauty and the Beast and all of those, each one kind of has a facet in it that you kind of see. They're like, oh, we're testing it here.
Right.
And then when you finally see The Lion King, you're like, oh, this is the culmination of all of these testing things. Because, like, if you hadn't had the, like, kind of shitty Cave of Wonders in Aladdin, you wouldn't have had the sweeping, like, beautiful 3D images that they have in The Lion King. And it's kind of like there are little bits that you see here and there in older ones, and it kind of culminates in this, like, beautiful work of art with The Lion King. Because it is a truly, it's a beautiful movie. It's a gorgeous film to look at. And I think the music is top-notch. It's absolutely great.
Stunning.
I think it is. I mean, the earworms aside, just listening to the score itself, I mean, we talked about it in the score, but it's phenomenal. And it's one of those things of like,
well, even like the ones that, you know, you start thinking about, like, you know, people talk about Be Prepared and like, oh, it's one of the most underrated mm-hmm. Disney. It's definitely it's not underrated.
Yeah, it's very well loved.
But like, it's the fact of the matter is it's outshined by every other piece of that, like a A-list quality song is considered underrated because every other song in this movie is also just that high of caliber. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say that, I guess, maybe Aladdin excels to the same amount there, but definitely not. I mean, I wouldn't say maybe few others before that.
I don't know. The only other
even
Disney
my favorite
movie,
Little Mermaid, like, has
the only other Disney movie I would really put like the music at the same caliber as Lion King is probably Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah,
because Beauty and the Beast, almost every song hits
is a bop. That's what I'm hearing.
It's a banger, every single one. But Lion King, I think almost it's like, because it does have a smaller selection of songs, but each one is just fantastic on its own.
For sure.
They don't have a miss. Mm-hmm. Like, Be Prepared is the closest, and it's, I wouldn't call it a miss. I love Be Prepared. It's probably my favorite of the villain songs.
That is. So.
Yeah, that is.
That is something to ponder there.
Yeah, I mean, now I'm just thinking of my favorite villain songs, and Ursula made a very recent comeback to me.
Poor Unfortunate Souls is also great.
I think it edges out just a little bit also because Ursula haunted my nightmares as a child. That's so fair. I have a very soft spot for Ursula now, but you know,
but
very good.
Yeah. In terms of, I'm trying to think of something we haven't touched on that I really love.
What have we not talked about?
Do we talk about like colors in this movie? Cause I think the color palette in this, the is color actually palette.
Yeah, we talked about that with production design.
We've talked about everything.
It's beautifully vibrant, and you know, it's one of those things of like, you watch something like The Lion King, and every time I watch a movie like that, I'm like, why don't they still do 2D animation kind of thing? Like,
I don't have an answer for you.
Like, that's one of those things, like you get a lot of very impressive films now with the 3D animation and what they can do. Mm-hmm. But you look at something like, you know, The Lion King, you're like, this is gorgeous.
And then you get, like, Despicable Me or something, like, which is highly the
first Despicable Me is fine.
Yeah,
it's impressive in its 3D animation, and it's got some great production design too.
I don't know if there's anything sweeping in
Despicable
Me. I
would never call
it
gorgeous the same way that I would call The Lion King gorgeous.
Yeah, they're two very different uses of the, yeah.
I mean, to even go back and compare it to like another Disney movie or another high group, I don't feel the same way about the animation and the style of art in Frozen that I do about The Lion King.
If we're talking about, like, we can really talk about vocal performance. I think everyone does a pretty good job. I think James Earl Jones and Rowan Atkinson stick out to me the most. I mean, Matthew Broderick is perfectly fine.
The thing I like about Matthew Broderick in that role is, and this is something that I like about a lot of animated movies, which is that when you have someone famous in the role and you don't quite care that someone famous is voicing that character, it was a big, you know, I don't know why, I just could not get over how much like they promoted The Rock when doing Moana and stuff like that. And I was like,
oh yeah,
I was like, other than maybe Angela Lansbury, when you go back and look at like promotional stuff for Beauty and the Beast, like you never really get that, you know, the idea that these people are famous people voicing these characters. They're And so I like that even though you have, you know, Matthew Broderick, you know, just after probably the height of his career, probably in his artistic height, at least, he's got Election coming up and stuff like
yeah.
He's got some other great movies that come after this, but
he's post
Godzilla 98.
He's post he's post Ferris Bueller at this point.
But pre his Broadway days.
Pre big Broadway. So this is definitely a precursor to that.
Yes.
Because he sings all of his own songs. And, but the thing about like James Earl Jones that I've always really enjoyed in this one is because it would have been super easy for James Earl Jones just to, you know, phone it in, so to speak, and just either, you know.
Say his lines in his voice. And
yeah, just use his voice. But this one, you can tell he differentiates it. Because if you listen to something like Darth Vader, or you just see him in a movie on his own, or you watch, you know, Mufasa and you listen to his voice, he definitely, you know, he has a characteristic voice that is iconic for a reason. But it's one of those things of like, you can tell he differentiates it. Like, he puts work to make this, you know, special.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Even when, yeah, like you said, seeing him as, or not seeing, but hearing him as Darth Vader versus, you know, seeing him in something like Field of Dreams or
The Sandlot.
I mean, there's a difference between James Earl Jones talking and James Earl Jones, like, acting, talking.
Yeah, like voice acting.
And you can tell where his passion projects are because he uses his signature depth in his voice, but he doesn't necessarily, you know, it's not all about that. It's clearly not Darth Vader that is voicing Mufasa.
Well, it's one of those things of like, lots of voice actors, or lots of like, so you're talking about The Rock, right?
Yeah.
Lots of celebrity voice actors who are just big celebrities who they're just like, oh, we're just going to use their voice. The thing about voice actors is they really hone their craft to be like, this is how specific I'm going to make this voice, like... It's they pour so much work into it, and a lot of celebrities are just like, oh, I'm just going to use my regular voice, and they don't really, you know, have any cause to change or do anything. And like, James Earl Jones was a famous actor at this point.
Yes.
And it wasn't necessarily just a famous voice actor. I mean, he had done Darth Vader, and that was, but he was a famous actor.
Yes, absolutely.
And he put the work in to make
Mufasa his own character.
I'm going to make Mufasa my own character, and it's not going to be Darth Vader.
Yeah. He excels at that, you know. Back to Angela Lansbury. Angela Lansbury didn't even just do Angela Lansbury. She did Mrs. Potts. And just to give credit where credit's due, and also justify some of my distaste for how they used The Rock in Moana.
I mean, but, even with The Rock, and I think another similar star would be Robin Williams in Aladdin. When they're talking, they're very charismatic people, so I think that really helps carry them through that, where it's not so much like, I have a specific voice that I have for this character in particular.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of them doing them, and I think that really does help them a lot.
Yeah.
I see where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm. I would do
Fortunately, neither of those movies are what we're talking about today, and we don't have to really get into it, but off mic, we'll talk about it.
Brett, do you have anything to add?
Not that hasn't already been said, no.
Yeah, so, I mean, so let's talk about, you know, we do have to make a decision at the end of this episode.
Right.
So what are some of the things that we aren't fans of in this movie, or things that, you know, we can defend or, you know, go after?
I mean, once again, I kind of get back to what we talked a lot about in the last episode, which was the story on this movie. I just always kind of wish there was a little bit more. I feel like it drops off a bit. Because basically... Grandma, we had talked about, just to kind of summarize, was that...
Grandma really hasn't been keeping up. He's a bad fan.
My point of view was that, you know, it's loosely based on Hamlet, yes?
Yes.
And that doesn't mean that it needs to, you know, be a beat-for-beat Hamlet adaptation. But it could have done more stuff,
or just different
stuff than what it did, and it kind of fell into this trap of every other Disney movie. And it's like, it worked perfectly fine. And there are, like we were saying, that perhaps the most emotional moving, or at least for me, the most moving moment of the second half of the film is when Simba talks to Mufasa
in
the sky. But it's like, other than that, I mean, I was kind of very kind of meh about the rest of it. And it was really leading up to Mufasa's death. There's a lot packed into that.
There is, yeah.
But after that, you're like, there's still half a movie, and it's kind of like...
Yeah.
Huh. So, that's where I landed on it. And, I mean, other than that, I don't... Like it, like we said, the animation's gorgeous. Technically, this film is, you know,
it's superb, top notch.
The music, the dancing, the color, the animation, the performance, everything about it.
There are some places that definitely have better performance than others, but that's going to be every movie.
Yeah, but
right, absolutely.
I don't want to get too nitpicky and, you know, start calling out Whoopi for phoning it in or something. You know, Whoopi just sounds like Whoopi.
That's true. Whoopi does just sound like Whoopi.
She does. She does.
She was at the height of her Whoopi, though.
Also, I mean, yeah, I mean, as a kid, I wasn't particularly bothered by that either. But now, yeah, seeing Sister Act and then going straight from Sister Act into The Lion King, there's, yes.
Same with Cheech. It's just him, you know?
Right, yeah.
At least with...
So that's just kind of Cheech in everything.
Yeah, at least with a children's... Like, children might be somewhat familiar with Whoopi from some of her other work. Most children aren't going to know who Cheech is.
Yeah.
They're going to be like, oh, that guy's voice, interesting. Maybe if they're even thinking about that. Most kids aren't going to be like, Cheech, why aren't you differentiating from, you know, Up in Smoke Cheech? Like,
I mean, he's also basically the same character in Oliver and Company, too. Like, there's just no difference. It's like exactly what you were saying, yeah.
Yeah. I guess... Maybe Disney's always done this, and I've just been more selective about my distaste with more recent films than I...
I think they've been getting better with it. But yeah, I think that was something that they did a lot earlier.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. Because my point of comparison there, just because I brought it up again, is like, yeah, Zach Levi and Mandy Moore were the voices in Tangled, but like, the promotion... surrounding the film didn't surround the fact that it was Zachary Levi
right,
and Mandy
exactly.
Moore doing their own love story or playing these characters. Whereas, I mean, you didn't need to know that Maui was a character. You just knew The Rock was in that movie. Similar to how all Dwayne The Rock Johnson movies are promoted
everything.
Yeah.
Are produced.
So I guess there's just a way you promote a movie with The Rock in it, but
he's his own brand, and that just plays into everything.
Exactly.
It makes everything a little more complicated, but yeah. No.
But I guess it sells tickets.
Mm-hmm.
It does.
Does anyone have anything else to say on The Lion King?
All of the sequels are better.
I disagree with that extremely.
Don't know that I'd say that, but I think they definitely improve in detail the world a little bit more, because I remember being a kid and even being like, okay, after seeing this, you know, time number 25 or whatever it was, it's just, you know, I always, you know, you want more, and there's only so much it can be packed in an hour and 40 minute movie or however long it was. But no, I mean, I think I'm slowly kind of starting to see the argument that The Lion King does drop off in energy a little bit, and it pains me to be so aware of that, because as a kid, you know, that was something that I would not have bothered me. But now if you're treating it as a film that's, you know, not just a really good animated film, but a really good, you know, motion picture, the energy and the pacing of that second act really does start to drop off. And, you know, it's just, okay, all right, let's get back to Pride Rock. Let's get the show moving. But,
yeah.
Yes, that's growth. Folks, that is growth. It took a lot for me to say that.
I don't want to speak for Carter and myself, but for myself, I want to make it clear that I don't hate the second half of this movie.
No.
Does anybody really hate?
There's nothing in this movie
that's hate-worthy. No,
we get down to the final rounds like this. Neither of these movies, like, I don't dislike either of these movies pretty much in any way, shape, or form.
Right, but
it's just when you're comparing tit for tat,
you have to
pick apart where the...
This
the strengths and the weaknesses
are. The
first
season, I think, ever going into it from the first week, that I have absolutely loved every movie we've had.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
There have been some seasons where, I think every season prior, there's been movies where I've been a little bit...
It's like, okay, not my favorite, but, you know,
some
we're looking
get,
at
some of those movies
lens.
Getting farther than others. Some of them are, you know, D2 The Mighty Ducks, and maybe shouldn't have been there to begin with, but... We can take that up with Mr. Phoenix the Rolla later.
He could have had National Treasure.
He could have picked National Treasure.
Come on, Phoenix.
Begged him to pick
National Treasure. But he hadn't seen National Treasure. You know what he had seen? D2 the Mighty Ducks.
How have you not? Okay. I mean,
he's seen it now.
Whatever. I'm glad. Nicolas Cage is Nicolas Cage. A single Cage, not many.
Nicolas Ford Coppola?
Nicolas Ford Coppola does not deserve to be disrespected in such a way.
Actually, he's just Nicolas Coppola.
Nicolas Coppola.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
But this isn't about Nicolas Coppola.
This is about
The Lion King.
The Lion King and
now
the Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight.
Transition to The Dark Knight.
Our smooth transition. Now, Graham, you said you had some opinions. I don't know if they were good or bad, but I'm curious.
Graham,
I
mean, my got very mysterious in the car ride over.
Don't love The Dark Knight. I think it's okay. How to describe this?
Brett is putting on brass knuckles right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I think it's kind of overrated. There's a lot of like conflicting opinions that I have on it, but overall I would say it's fine.
Okay, so let's start breaking it down.
Let's break it down.
What do you mean by overrated? Just like give us your baseline for what
I think that the story's okay. I think that some of the acting is really fantastic and that other actors are fine in the role. They aren't anything revolutionary. Christian Bale. I think that also maybe the movie's a little too long. I will say
I agree with you. Yeah. I brought this up last week.
It's 2.5 hours. That's a full hour more than The Lion King, and it definitely feels like it.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about this. Every time he gets to... You've seen this movie multiple times, I assume. Have, yeah. As a lot of people have. As, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Every time it gets to the scene where Batman has to choose between saving Rachel or saving Harvey, you're like, oh, this movie's almost over. And then it's not.
It's like The Last Jedi. Another. There's still like way more.
Yeah. But I think The Last Jedi does it better.
So. It does do it better. I would agree with that. But yeah, it's like this movie is not very well paced to me. Like there's moments that are so fascinating, like the interrogation scene. And then there's just other parts where it's like, let's get the show on the road. Let's keep it moving here. I will say I'm also not a huge fan of realistic Batman. So like that does contribute to it.
Brett looks like he has some thoughts. Also, you've been very quiet, Brett. So
it's like, those are all fair points. Like, I'm not sure if overrated is the right word, but I do get a little tired of like the Dark Knight circle jerk.
Yes.
Everyone's just always like, it's the best. It's the best. It's the best comic book movie. And it's like, okay, like we get it. Like it's a good movie. Like,
yeah, here's the
calm
issue.
Down. And so it's like, I can understand where you're coming from. Like, I totally get it. Like, yeah, pacing is kind of like, it's not as airtight as again, as like the circle jerk definitely makes it out to be. So like, yeah, like there are pacing issues. Like I don't think it's any, like, big deal that you say, like, it's okay. Like, yeah, that's perfectly fine. That's fair.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm not going to lose sleep or jump across the room to get at you or something. Like, yeah, that's fair. I totally see what you're saying.
The circle jerk, as you call it, about The Dark Knight, I think is the perfect way to put it. Because it's this conversation that essentially was happening prior to this huge superhero boom that we've had, you know, in... the following 10 years, you know? So everything that's been made since then has taken lessons from The Dark Knight and, you know, kind of refined and maybe tried to perfect that formula.
And Most of them not doing it.
Most of them not doing it full justice, especially DC not doing
it. Oh, especially,
Total justice. But I would say that...
Trying desperately.
I would say there... in 2011, I wouldn't say that there was any competition with The Dark Knight for best superhero movie. In 2018, I would say that there are several movies giving it a run for its money.
Like The Dark Knight Rises.
No. Sure. That's a bad movie, but that I'll leave for another day.
I mean, Batman Begins even gives The Dark Knight a run for its money.
Yeah, Batman, I actually think that might be my favorite of the trilogy.
That's perfectly fine. Batman, I feel like people sleep on Batman Begins.
They do.
It's definitely...
Batman Begins is a whole lot of fun.
Not a bad movie. It is quite really entertaining. Good. It sets everything up very well. And we also get Katie Holmes... in the role, and not, and I'm okay. I am not as big of a fan of Maggie Gyllenhaal. Very sorry, Maggie Gyllenhaal. I hope you come on the show, but I'm not as big of a fan as
now. I'm going to pull out the brass knuckle
as Katie Holmes. I
say Maggie Gyllenhaal is a far and away brass knuckles great improvement over Katie Holmes.
All right, let's go, Brett. But
steel toe boots, brass toes.
Let's go. No, I mean Batman Begins is a good movie. We'll just put that out there.
That's all I want.
It's an okay movie. It's fine.
That's all I want.
I always found Batman Begins to be a more like well-rounded movie. If that makes sense.
Batman Begins is also more of like a straight comic book movie.
Yeah,
it's more like because it's blurring the lines.
Because Dark Knight to me always hit really hard and really well in a lot of places, but it was a little bit more uneven.
Uneven is a good word. It's yeah, a very good Dark Knight's word to describe it.
I'm under no illusion. The Dark Knight's definitely a more uneven film, but it's not like make it or break it. It's just one of those things of like, even with the pacing I've talked about, like, because it's one of those things of you have so much going on and then they give a moment for the audience to breathe. Kind of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, we talked about this last week. Yeah.
And it's one of those things of you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound kind of thing. Like, if you're gonna watch The Dark Knight, you're gonna watch The Dark Knight. Like, absolutely. You know you're committing.
Right. I would
watch a light superhero movie, you go watch Thor Ragnarok, which is, like, just at 2 hours and, you know, light and fun.
Here's what I would say, and this is my, I don't know if it's a hot take. I would rather watch The Dark Knight trilogy than the Lord of the Rings trilogy all in one sitting.
That's not really that's a hot take of any sort. That's just personal preference.
Yeah. I mean,
which is like,
sure. I feel like there's a lot of people that don't. I think it's a take just because I never hear people like being like, oh, let's all watch all the Dark Knight trilogy. Like,
it's because they don't want to get super depressed.
Yeah.
If you want,
Carter, you know the state that I already live my life in.
I mean, so. each movie is. That's the thing, is like, just I don't know that I've done all three before. I've done Batman Begins and Dark Knight, just the two of them a lot. And just watching the two of them back to back, you kind of feel like, you know, someone's.
I mean, having watched all three back to back to back, like on numerous occasions, like after a while, you kind of start to be like, okay, we get it. Like, Batman's broody. Like,
oh, really?
I understand.
This is
like,
the thing.
Like, by the time you get to, like, The Dark Knight Rises and he's there, he's like, I gotta stop Bane. I'll be able to stop Bane. And it's like, okay, we understand. Batman's got a lot of emotions. Like,
But again, this is
having done it, like, a number of times.
No, I feel that. This is like, also coming from me having done neither of those marathons ever, so. Because it's just not my thing to do.
They can both be very long, though. Yeah. Like,
I have marathoned two film series ever. When we did the MCU, and I was in and out of that, to be fair.
That's true. Brett and I think, were the only ones that sat through the whole thing.
You're right. 18 movies.
18 movies. Next one's going to be 20.
Also, shout out to Joy Clausen. She was also there for the whole thing.
There.
Yes.
We were all troopers. Yes. I don't know how we're going to do the next one.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be great. Yeah, I'm excited.
And obviously, the Star Wars movies, which I think Carter and I do fairly often.
Pretty often. I don't know. Well, we don't really do them all in one sitting. But
I mean, that's because who has the time to? But we do get them all done in like a week.
I mean, we found the time to watch all the Marvel movies in a week.
You know what? Carter, what are you doing this weekend? Actually, no, we're both out
of town. We're both going home. That's fine. Yeah, so The Dark Knight, where I'm at with it now, presently. It's very much like, I think, here's the thing. You talk about the circle jerk, but it's there for a reason. Like,
and the reason is to stand in a circle.
The Dark Knight was.
be a bunch of jerks. And
be a bunch of jerks.
Like, so, yeah.
The Dark Knight was. The Dark Knight was the closest superhero movie ever to being like the best picture kind of thing. It was.
And winning a non-technical Oscar.
Yeah, it was the closest. And I mean, Logan's probably the next closest. But it's one of those things of like, you have to give credit.
See what happens this year with a certain Marvel movie.
Yeah, give credit where credit is due kind of thing. It's like, sure, it gets talked about a lot and it gets beat to death, I think, also. but I think it's deserving of the praise. I think, as with any movie, when you kind of blindly praise it for so long and you don't think about it, because like what we've done here is we've basically broken down that it's not a perfect movie because there's no such thing as a perfect movie.
Well, but we have yet to find a perfect movie.
It's a very, very, very good movie that has a lot of strengths and has some weaknesses too. And I'm a little bit surprised that you thought it had a weak story, Graham.
It's okay. I don't... I shouldn't say weak.
To me, it's like the perfect middle chapter. I talked about this on a previous episode, but it's to me like the perfect middle chapter in that you kind of... You have met all of these characters now. And now each character has to be tested and grows, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And like the story ultimately belongs to Harvey Dent. And it's like watching him go from, you know, good to evil kind of thing. And then Bruce having to, you know, basically fight this unstoppable force, which is the Joker. And I because he's preoccupied with that, he doesn't see the problem that's right in front of him. So I've always thought it was interesting.
Yeah. I do love the part of the story where it's really just the Joker pushing Batman, testing his morals. Like, I always love that in any iteration that they do that in. I do like how Harvey Dent is kind of like the one who is corrupted by this. And we kind of see like, oh, this is what could happen. This is how the Batman could be corrupted.
Well, it's not even that. It's Harvey Dent's corruption is Batman's greatest failure. Because Batman could have stopped it. He could have seen it, but he didn't because he was obsessed with the Joker. And so it's like Harvey Dent turning evil and killing all of those people is Batman's greatest failure. Because he was so obsessed that he couldn't see what was right there in front of him.
Okay. I see where you're coming from, yeah.
Because to me, like, one of my favorite scenes in that whole movie is the scene in the restaurant with him and Harvey and Maggie Gyllenhaal's
character.
Rachel. Where's Rachel? We were so good about not doing the Batman voice almost the whole season.
We trip at the finish line.
But
I had no part in that.
Also,
that's the new time. I've never been. I was trip at the finish line.
I was never terribly keen on Christian Bale's Bruce Wayne. I always thought his Batman was perfectly fine, but I was never particularly keen on his Bruce Wayne. But that scene, just when he's like, "Well, they should. I own the place." That to me was like that was a good redeeming line. Good Bruce Wayne. That was a good Bruce Wayne moment because
fuck Bruce Wayne. Right?
Christian Bale's whole thing is like he was like, oh no, my Bruce Wayne's gonna be an asshole because it's like you had like George Clooney was like my Bruce Wayne's gonna be like
smarmy
and suave, and Michael Keaton was like my Bruce Wayne's gonna be fucking crazy because my Batman's fucking crazy and I'm insane. If you ever look at the Batman in the original Tim Burton Batman, he's literally crazy.
He's a little off his rocker.
The original.
No, I love it too. But it's like, there's no illusion that Batman, like that Bruce Wayne and Batman, is terribly mentally disturbed.
Oh, yes.
Like,
the man dresses up as a bat to fight crime. Like,
that's always been my biggest defense of Ben Affleck's Batman, is like the whole Martha thing, which I understand is poor writing on its own.
But that's not like.
But to me, I was always like, this man is clearly unstable, and he's been driven to this point of extreme madness, so it would make sense that he's easily triggered.
Yeah, oh, he is super triggered.
But Carter, why would you say that name?
Why would I say that name? And so it's like, it's one of those things of like, Batman always has been, and this I would say is perhaps the most stable Batman, but
he's
definitely an asshole.
If you're into stability. If you're not into stability.
Yeah, but he's not as asshole-y as, like, an actual asshole. He's, like,
He just plays the asshole.
He's a little arrogant at times, but he's never just kind of like, fuck you, I'm rich.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. It's like...
But I just think he does that more than, I think, any of the other ones.
I mean, probably, but... I don't know. I'm perfectly fine with his Bruce Wayne. I actually really like it. Because he very much shows. He's like, yeah, like, Bruce Wayne is not the person I am. Like, I am, like, the Batman. That's how I think of myself.
And, that's because the Bruce Wayne was always the mask.
Yeah. And you very much see more Batman than Bruce Wayne in these movies.
Yeah, the Dark Knight. Dark Knight especially is very, very Batman heavy.
Very bat heavy.
The bat.
Dark Knight Rises, though, it's kind of weird. I'm trying to think back on the mix, but because Batman Begins definitely more Bruce Wayne heavy.
Yeah, because it's the origin story, which is to be expected.
Yeah,
Then the Dark Knight Rises tries to like balance, tries to like do it's them equally, weird. But it's just like it kind of fumbles around a bit.
I like Dark Knight Rises. Like I think it gets.
I like it too, but I think it doesn't quite get that.
It's
right
a lot more hate than it needs, but
like yeah. But
oh, I mean, it was a perfectly entertaining film. I mean, that had nuance to a certain degree. That I mean, it was not a perfect movie. I see you. I see you, Brett.
No, it was the nuance part. I'm like, I don't think that movie was nuanced.
I would have to be in another viewing, but there was some depth and detail and nuance in the film. I mean, you know, I can't tell you what, but I know that there was.
Yeah, my greatest comparison between the two is that, like, Dark Knight, I think, tackles some large themes and tackles them successfully. I think Dark Knight Rises arguably tackles some even larger themes, and does not tackle them as successfully.
I would say he tackles large people.
He does tackle large people. One large man in particular.
One Mr. Tom Hardy.
But he got so big for that. That's insane.
Then not as
big. Crazy.
For Venom.
No, because Tom Hardy's like a tiny person, but then he was like huge when he was Bane.
He was.
Yeah.
I didn't know who Tom Hardy was before he was Bane.
But I mean, then you see him post Bane, and you're like,
literally got huge.
If anyone wants to see Tom Hardy at his most bizarre, go watch Star Trek Nemesis.
Oh yes,
he plays the bad guy.
Oh yes,
Praetor Shinzon.
Oof,
he's something.
I love Star Trek Nemesis. I know I get hate for that.
So Brett, are you saying that you didn't know who he was before he put on the mask?
Yeah, I didn't. Like, I thought about that as soon as I said that, and I was like, "All right, let's see if that flies under the radar." But
nah,
I should have known better. But you also want to see a good Tom Hardy role? Watch a Peaky Blinders.
Mm-hmm.
Plays the rival Jewish gang leader in seasons like 2 and 3.
The entire gang.
He is the entire gang.
He plays the rival Jewish gang.
Well, yeah,
just Tom Hardy split into 8 people.
Oh, Thomas Shelby, right? It's like.
You already can't understand a word that man said. Have you ever watched the show Taboo? It was on FX. He literally just growls through every word in that show. And it's kind of... His whole, like, character is really weird. His wardrobe's something else.
Oh, it's great.
It's great.
It's fantastic.
It's fantastic. But he's just a whole bunch of top hats and, like, torn petticoats and stuff. It's really quite cool. It's like punk rock gothic. But, yeah, he literally growls through every single word. And it's kind of hilarious. It's almost comical because he'll talk to someone and just be like,
it's like
they're
yes. Like Vin Diesel in the Fast almost, and the Furious movies now.
But he does it with a thick accent on top of the growling.
Ringing Tyrese.
And Paul Walker.
What? Paul Walker, my friend, he did.
Oh my.
Oh no.
Family.
All right.
Corona.
Does anyone have it?
But kind of my thing about like the circle jerk with the Dark Knight, which didn't really like, has kind of been in the back of my mind for a while. Everyone's like, oh, this is like the perfect Batman story. It's the best. And it's like, this Batman story has been told numerous times.
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything
Go read the Long Halloween, which is essentially almost what the themes of which is what the Dark Knight is based on. And then like take almost any Batman story with the Joker. It's just about the Joker trying to corrupt Batman. And so, like, that's part of the circle jerk that bugs me the most, is everyone's just kind of like, oh, this is the greatest story. It's like, no, the story's been being told since the Joker has been around, guys.
When you bring in, like, oh, this is the best Batman story, I get a lot more hesitant. If you're talking about the best Batman movie, I mean
this one is definitely up there.
It's up there. Could be made.
It's just that's where the circle jerk really gets me, is when people act like this is totally original and nothing like this has ever been done before. And
Batman has
been
like
around
that.
Since the 40s. Every single one of these stories has been told before. Yeah.
No. The fun part is seeing how new directors and new actors
like that is fun. Like, it is really nice.
Which... It's like, it's a lot of people not knowing not their Batman history or their...
But, like the animated movie Batman Under the Red Hood, which deals with, the Joker killing Jason Todd and Jason Todd coming back and Batman realizing that. And then, like, Jason Todd trying to, like, get revenge on the Joker and, to an extent, Batman and seeing, like, how the Joker's impacted these different people and, like, how they all choose to, like, cope with it and react to it and deal with it. And, like, that's a very good story.
Or to a lesser extent. Batman Beyond Return of the Joker, which also deals with a dead Robin that becomes the Joker.
As dark, though. It's very different.
I mean, physically, it is very dark.
Oh, yeah.
That is true.
Batman
Beyond. A lot of shadows.
Yeah, Batman Beyond is a very dark color palette series.
Love Batman Beyond.
So good.
Drops off in the third season.
Yeah, fair enough.
Like, yeah, it's good.
But now that we've talked about Batman as a whole, do we have anything else to say about The Dark Knight in general?
Basically, I'll give it my good old sum up. The Carter trademarks sum up the points.
Spill something in your yard and add a summary.
Yards.
Get on with
it. Get on with it. I think The Dark Knight excels in its story and its performances. I think it perhaps lacks a bit in the pacing. But again, I go back to it's deliberately paced. There's a difference between something being poorly paced and something being deliberately paced. And I would say The Dark Knight is deliberately paced. Like, you have to get through the slow part to earn the exciting part or earn the ending. And so, yes, it can be boring, but it's also, if it's supposed to be boring, is that wrong?
Yes.
So,
perhaps.
I don't know. Even if it's supposed to be boring, doesn't change the fact that it's boring.
So,
like 2001 A Space Odyssey, like, it's a good movie. That movie's boring.
I don't know that Space Odyssey is supposed to be boring, though.
Even so, it's still boring.
True. Like, it's boring.
Boring, supposed to be boring. Boring is boring, and it's not good. Like, things can be slow and deliberately paced and not be boring.
That's true.
So.
Well, that's where I'm at on that. So, does anyone else have any other...
I guess real quick, acting is pretty good for some people. Heath Ledger, you know, is obviously fantastic. Gary Oldman, I think, is really good as Commissioner Gordon. I think he's the best live-action version of that. And then there's a lot of really good side actors. What?
I'm trying to think of all the other live-action Commissioner Gordons. I'm like, I couldn't.
There's the
J.K. Simmons.
Yeah. J.K. Simmons, I guess.
In that
for
movie,
his whole
for a minute,
3 minutes.
3 minutes. We'll never see him again.
God. It shouldn't be this hard to make
JJ
a Batman movie.
J.J. Jameson. I think there's a lot of really good actors and bit parts here. Anthony Michael Hall, Michael Jai White, mm-hmm. William Fichtner. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's really good at as the bank teller.
You and your friends are dead.
yeah,
and then he's never seen again.
Nope, never again.
Okay, this is sorry, I don't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, go
but
for it.
This is a question I've always had. During that initial bank heist, when you see the Joker, while he's in the mask, like, giving everybody the grenades, and he's there and he pulls the pins. So do all those people get exploded, or are they still just there holding live grenades? Like, what? I was never entirely clear on the outcome of that. What are you guys holding, like grenades?
Because if he just pulls the pin and they don't release the...
Okay, yeah. As someone who's not familiar with how grenades work.
I think the whole idea is that, like, don't run, don't move, or else...
Okay. So I was just kind of like, damn.
It would take a bomb squad to, like, sit there and, like, pinch down and then be like, now release your
job. Okay, so, like, for a long time, I was just kind of like, damn, they just exploded a lot of people. Like, geez. But then, like, later on, I was like, no, they're all still sitting there in the same position. I should learn how grenades work. So, yeah, thanks for clearing that up for me, guys.
Well, I think we've talked about these two movies enough this whole season.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's time to get to the voting.
Quite a bit.
It's time to get to the voting. For the season 4 finale, it got here quicker than we thought it would.
All right, Robbie, kick us off.
Kick us off. We're just picking winners?
Just picking winners.
Just picking winners.
Oh, I don't want to go first, but...
I'll go first.
Okay, Carter.
No, my winner. I want to see Robbie go first.
All right.
You want to see me go first?
Yeah, let's watch Robbie go first.
I want to see Robbie go first.
I'm very stuck on this one. I came in with a very clear idea of what I thought was going to happen, and then our conversations... Despite not having many new arguments, just made me think a lot more.
Gave you some time.
Interesting.
I think when it comes down to it, I have more while these are both fantastic movies and their merits shine above all of their flaws, I think there are less flaws in the 90 minutes that make up The Lion King than there are in The Dark Knight. So my winner this season, despite what I thought, is The Lion King.
Interesting.
Just... Brett the Rock Johnson.
Oh, going to me.
Care to weigh in?
Oh, geez. Where do we begin? Anyone? Anyone?
Oh, Bueller? Here.
Anyway, I'm quoting the Joker, you plebs. Ugh. Dark Knight's the best movie. Ugh.
That was a completely different side of bread. Wow.
I'm part of the circle jerk, Shannon. Surprise. Oh,
surprise.
Doing a heel turn.
I am the circle jerk.
Tearing off my mask. Psych. But,
only makes you jerker.
I'm going to ask and possibly beg you to never say that again, Robbie. Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat as Robbie. Like, I've been thinking about this a lot and, like, no real new arguments. But, yeah, like, thinking on things, like thinking about the characters, thinking about the story, the music, the design of everything. And just, if I'm being honest, I did find us, over the course of the season, it seemed like conversation generally... There were fewer negative things and fewer, like, nitpicks made about, like, The Lion King than there were about The Dark Knight. And I think just looking at everything, trying to be as objective as possible, I think I am going to have to vote for The Lion King on this one.
Carter Spilliards.
Well, I go back and forth. Because if we approach it from one way... I see...
Approach it from your way.
Well, I have two schools of thought. So...
But how many schools of fish?
One school of thought for me is that while The Dark Knight perhaps has more nitpicks, the Lion King has a more fundamental problem with the story. And it's like, does it overcome that most fundamental problem? And I think The Dark Knight does not succumb to that. But when we think about the thing we always go back to of if you're faced with, you know, a movie theater and you have one movie playing on one side and one movie playing on the other, and you have to pick one or the other.
They're playing at the same time. You can't.
They're playing at the same time.
Someone is holding a gun to your head.
Someone has put a grenade in your mouth.
Yeah. And if
you're holding a live grenade.
If you pick, and if it were that, if it's that scenario, I go with The Lion King because, I mean, the film itself is just, it's all around more pleasant and heartwarming and just enjoyable to watch. And so it's kind of one of the heart versus...
I can understand that not making it a better film.
Kind of one of those heart versus brain things. Of objectively speaking, I think The Dark Knight is a better film. And I think it has more merit. But I think, you know, if I'm truly talking about which film do I like more, it might be The Lion King. So...
But I think you just said that in your mind... In your thinking, The Dark Knight is a better film objectively.
That's true.
I'm just trying to speed you along here. Yeah. I think you said it right there.
Or just how about we just let Carter finish?
Well, see, that's where I was going because I don't know. I really
Carter. It's head, I'll go first.
It's a head versus. Well,
really,
it's a head versus heart thing. You know. Well, I thought we'd have more time to discuss this.
But. No, you're fine.
We've had a whole season.
We have had a whole season. And I mean, I guess you're right. Objectively speaking, I think The Dark Knight is a superior film. So I will say The Dark Knight is my winner.
Okay.
All right.
Graham Hellboy.
All right. Well, believe it or not, I do actually prefer one of these movies more than the other. But objectively speaking, I do think that even though both of these stories have been done to some varying degrees, I think The Lion King's is consistently better. Better paced, better done. And even though the last 20 minutes are kind of a step down, I think that The Lion King is the better movie.
I would actually say it's a middle 20 minutes. Because the fight at Pride Rock, riveting.
It's okay.
Yeah.
There have been better Disney climaxes.
It's just hard to make lions fight and it not look like two cats just pawing at each other.
Yeah.
So they put fire.
Okay, very, very cool. Shannon?
All right. Well, everything seems to have been aptly said throughout this entire season and this last 5 to 7 minutes. So I'm going to go with The Lion King being the superior film. However, I was nearly swayed to the Dark Knight side in the course of this.
So you would say episode. You were almost seduced by the dark side?
I almost was seduced by the dark side. I almost danced with the dark side. But I'm going to have to still go with The Lion King because, I mean, I think both movies fundamentally have issues with the pacing. So that's nothing really new. And I think to some extent every movie has some pretty glaring issues with pacing. But aside from that, I think we did talk more about the flaws of The Dark Knight over the course of the season than we did The Lion King. It's harder for me to come up with objective criticism with The Lion King, and maybe it's because it's shorter. I don't know, with an extra hour, you know, The Dark Knight makes it a little difficult, or makes it a whole lot easier, actually, to come up with issues. And so, yes, I'm going with The Lion King.
And there you have it, folks. Season 4 of Film Fracas. The winner is the one and only Lion King. And I guess we found out why he is the king.
Yeah.
There you go. That's, you
know, after all this?
Damn, that was...
This season, it really just came full circle, past the circle jerk to the circle of life.
God, there we go.
We've come, yeah, full
circle. If we didn't have to give recommendations, I would have ended the podcast right there. But we do have to give our recommendations. Carter Spilliards, kick us off.
All right, let's see. You can find me on Twitter at CA Spilliards, like spill some yard and S. My recommendation this week is a brand new show, just premiered this past Sunday on Disney Channel, Star Wars Resistance. It's their newest animated show from Dave Filoni and company at Lucasfilm. If you watch The Clone Wars or Rebels, this one takes place, I think, just a couple of months before The Force Awakens. It's very, very close.
It's prior to The Force Awakens.
But it's very, very... It's like leading into The Force Awakens, basically. And... I mean, I like it. I'm going to give it more. I only watched the first episode. I quite enjoyed it in some ways. In other ways, I was a little bit... I'm very curious to see where they go. So, yeah. It's a little bit kiddish, but I don't know that that's necessarily a problem when it's on a kids' network and it's a cartoon for kids. So... It's fair enough.
Thank you. That's the one thing I want to shout at everybody that's always like shitting on like animated shows. It's like it's for children.
It's at its core
a children's TV show. Like, who cares if you don't like Teen Titans Go? I don't, but I recognize it's a kid's show and it wasn't made for me. So yeah. Get over it.
But I do quite enjoy it. The art style is beautiful. The characters are actually all really interesting, which is impressive. They did a very good job of establishing all of their new characters very quickly.
There you go. Breath of Rock Johnson.
All right. My recommendation this week.
Where can people follow you?
Oh, yeah. That's my bad. You can find me on Twitter and Snapchat at Brett, JHNSN, #1. My recommendation this week, I'm keeping up my Brett Johnson October Spooky series. I recently watched John Carpenter's 87, I think it's 87, Prince of Darkness, part of his Apocalypse trilogy. It's actually one of my favorite John Carpenter movies. Is it great? Is it bad? No, I really enjoy it because it's so different. The basic premise is that this one like Catholic church has this canister in a basement that is some kind of like malevolent force that it is revealed to be like the devil. And it's just, and this group of physicists comes in to like examine and study it and find out what's going on. And just the way things go. And it's just, it's a very cerebral movie, but it's like, it's a movie that could only exist in its time period. If you try to make it now, it would be too much, but it's very interesting. It's very different. I love it. Go watch it. It's not great. It's not bad though. So yeah.
You have no idea how close I was to recommending that movie.
Oh, hot damn.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Robbie_DeShazer. I post stuff there. Talk a lot about movies, talk about the upcoming election, that should be my recommendation. Register to vote. If you live in Texas and you're hearing this on Wednesday, it's a day too late. I'm sorry.
Maybe recommend something that people can
If I have to recommend something people have to do now, you should probably just go watch 1984's This is Spinal Tap, one of my favorite mockumentaries. It's a lot of fun to watch. If you haven't seen it and you've heard all the jokes and the quotes, you need to go see it in context. It's a good time. Have fun watching it. You know, if you haven't watched it, go enjoy. But that's my recommendation. Shannon?
Hey guys, you can follow me on Letterboxd at ZedsDead5. This week I'm going to be recommending Baz Luhrmann's 1992 film Strictly Ballroom, which I watched on a whim on Netflix without thinking about it at all and found that I really quite enjoyed it. Australian film is weird and glitzy and makes off-color jokes and, you know, wonderful for many different weird, bizarre ways. But, you know, Strictly Ballroom, fun story, really zany, an interesting lead of characters that come up to the forefront of this movie, and it's really gorgeous. It's quite beautiful, very dazzling, and kind of sticks with you. So I'm going to be recommending Strictly Ballroom.
And our esteemed guest, Mr. Graham Gora, what you got for us?
All right. Well, you can find me on my Zynga page. The movie that I'm going to recommend is one that I just saw for the first time.
Doesn't even provide a link. I love it.
I just saw it recently, but it's cemented as one of my personal favorites now. 1986's True Stories. For those of you who don't know, Talking Heads frontman David Byrne made a movie about the people who live in a small town of Virgil, Texas. And it's just kind of all these eclectic personalities coming together and celebrating their sesquicentennial with a celebration of specialness. And I really love it. I totally recommend it.
It's so much fun.
It is very good.
It's very good. Yeah.
I'll have to check it out.
All right. Actually, I'll recommend that in our bonus episode that we are going to have next week, so I won't say what I was about to say.
But all right, that's going to do it for season 4 of Film Fracas.
Bonus episode next week.
Yeah, we're going to have a bonus episode next week. Thank you guys so much for listening. And
a brand new season.
Yeah, we're going to have a new season coming. It's going to be different. It's going to be very exciting.
Let's just say it might be in a galaxy far, far away.
I was trying to refrain from doing that because I wanted to leave something to the imagination.
Well,
but
yeah,
anyway.
Now it's the point of having a bonus episode.
Yeah, but
we'll talk about lots of fun stuff.
But yeah, we'll talk about who chose this season's movies. We're going to talk about what next season's going to be. It's going to be very informative. So
it's going to be a blast.
Yeah. So thank you very much. And as always, stay tuned. Bye-bye. Hey, guys. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. We know there are a lot of shows on the web, and we're really glad that you took the time to listen to ours. Thank you to Carter, the whole effing show Spilliards, Robbie, the main man DeShazer, and Shannon Livewire Widener for helping to write and produce each episode. Please consider giving us a 5-star rating wherever you listen. It really does help get the word out. You can follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, @FilmFracas. Once again, thanks for listening, and we can't wait for you to hear our next episode.